Blog Talk Radio.
You brought too many.
We'll be right back.
show number 1,406. Welcome. Pardon me. Welcome. As we get ready to set things up with another hump day buffet, 2+ hours of good food for thought, courtesy of your loving mad scientist here at Soul T Radio. I am a Leon Thomas thing going in the Raw. Soul T Radio in the Raw, proudly brought to you by BASNNewsroom.com and the brothers and sisters of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, wherever they may be. Radio Reggie in Richmond, Virginia. The Orlando Ledbetter and Sonic Cheryl Jones in Philadelphia. Pat Freeman, the mighty Oba, residing somewhere in Western New York, doing the Oba thing as Oba do. Oba do. Yeah, I like that. Also, keeping it hot with his book, The Art of the Interview, book one, doing well on Amazon. I suggest y'all pick that bad boy up. Be pleasantly surprised. And, of course, the rest of the brothers, when we get down to things. Now, I think you guys might remember a book called Everything I Learned in Life I Learned in Kindergarten. Okay. So I made some group assumptions about things and whatnot, and stuff clicked on most of it. Well, I can say that everything I learned as a young and not so young adult, I learned from advertising. First rule, all these motherfuckers lie. I mean, they all lie. Well, let me put it this way. All right. The first thing that I ever wanted, I mean ever wanted, was oat flakes. Yes, you heard me. Post oat flakes. And as the commercials kept coming on, I'm this impressionable little kid thinking, oh, because post oat flakes taste like oatmeal cookies. At least that's what they told your ass. All right, so I'm caught up now. I want oat flakes. And me, I don't get shit because I'm a middle kid. So if somebody wanted something, the baby came first only because he was the baby. Brat, motherfucker. My sister, who was the favorite and the only girl, got priority over everything. And my older brothers, well, you know, they were older brothers, so they were just doing older brother shit. And, of course, the commercials kept coming and my pleas kept coming. Finally, my mother bought me oat flakes. You know, they taste like oatmeal cookies. And it's Saturday morning, so y'all know what's up. I'm getting ready to get down with the cartoons and shit. All's good. I got my bowl. Filled it up with oat flakes, got my sugar, sliced my bananas, and everything is looking good until I poured the milk. It wasn't even 10 seconds, and it started to turn into this huge bowl of mush. And I was like, what? I took a spoonful. This shit disintegrated as soon as my lip hit the spoon. And I was like, I can't eat this shit. And my mother is looking at me, you better eat every one of those motherfucking oat flakes, or I will put some oat flakes strap on your ass. Needless to say, this was not the time for my stubbornness to kick in. But being a Taurus, that's exactly what I did. I ain't eating this shit.
I didn't say that shit out loud. You don't disrespect moms.
But I didn't eat it. And my ass was used for target practice for the next 15 minutes as Ma got her batting stroke down and was swatting my ass like she was trying to beat dust from a rug. Well, I didn't eat any more of them damn oat flakes, but you get the point. I was conned into believing that oat flakes tasted like oatmeal cookies, but all they tasted like was a bowl of mushy shit. But I digress. With me, my faithful West Indian companion, Tony McLean. Big T, what's going on, brother?
Oak flakes?
Oat Flakes. That's what I know. I know you hear about them because they got rid of those motherfuckers. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a generation of children who grew up to be serial killers because of Oat Flakes.
No shit, literally.
What was the one? Was it Kix that the KIX
yes.
had the red berry on the cover of the box.
Oh, that's Trix.
Oh, that's Trix? No, well Trix.
Well,
Trix was. No,
Trix had the colors.
KIX.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, Trix had the silly
yeah.
rabbit. You know.
Yes, he had the motherfucking rabbit. Yes, who never got
yeah,
the Trix.
You know, silly rabbit. Trix
mm-hmm.
for kids.
Yeah, the
but
Kix was really
I remember Kix. It was like, what, you know, what is this devil food that they're trying to push on Kix? See, what threw me off was the
yeah.
blueberry. I had never known about blueberries. So when I saw the blueberry, I just immediately thought, evil. So, no.
Yeah. Well, the reason we're bringing this up tonight is because advertising has gotten in the way of the real world. And since this is a sports show, this is why we had to go this way. By means of the Euros. Now, the European competition is like an NCAA elimination contest with all the European sides playing soccer. Of course, there was a bit of a kerfuffle because the French won last time, and, well, the French squad was almost all black. So when Trevor Noah, smart young man that he is, made that aside, the French government, they were all upset. And it was like, these gentlemen, they represent France. No, these gentlemen are black who live in France. So it was one of those deals kind of like what happened when Naomi picked up the racket and they said before she won that she was half Haitian and half Japanese. But when she won, oh, she's representing Japan. We've seen this on another level prior to when Mesut Ozil, who is a striker from Germany who was born in Turkey, helped the Germans win. And, of course, he was Ozil the striker. But when they played in a similar competition like these Euros, Germany lost. And so, again, he was a Turkish motherfucker then. He wasn't German now. So we got Gary with this. But the point I'm making here is after Euros, some interesting things happened. Apparently, after a match with Portugal, Cristiano Ronaldo, who is one of the most renowned strikers in recent history, sat at the press table ready to riff on what had happened during the day. There was a bottle of Coca-Cola at the podium, in addition to some other shit. Now, we can make the aside that Coke is a huge sponsor of the Euros because, you know, you got people drinking Coca-Cola. But I don't know how it got there, but Cristiano Ronaldo, who is a serious health-conscious person, I mean, he's like less than 3% body fat. He eats 6 small meals a day to deal with his metabolism. But he has kids. And somehow the conversation got around to the Coca-Cola and kids. And Ronaldo said that he didn't like the idea of his kids going after sugary drinks and that he gives them water. So he said, kids should not drink Coke. They should drink water at the press conference. Now, what followed was a huge plunge in the market on Coca-Cola. So, and we're talking Coca-Cola, Fanta, and all the labels that you'd find in Europe.
Yeah. And they encompass Sprite and a bunch of other, Yeah.
Well, they took a bitch slap from the market, apparently to the tune of almost $5 billion. $4.6 billion, I think, was the number. and they lost their bunny rabbit blinking minds.
Yeah, you'll feel that in the morning. Yeah, you'll feel that in the morning.
So it was mind-numbing, and the Coke people got on spin control and did what they could to try to salvage it, but the damage had been done and the motion had been made. Ronaldo spoke and people listened. Now, I don't know when the last time one of us here heard somebody speak like that and say, oh, yeah, okay, we got you. But I was bringing this up with Gary. And, Gary, I'm going to ask you again. Have you ever heard of such a change of events like that?
Well, I remember in 75 when it go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go-go- and they would not employ a black executive.
Right.
And we said, okay, fine, we won't drink coke.
Yep.
And that, you know, that's what I remember.
Yes, and I know afterwards they was coking and blacking like a motherfucker. But to add insult to even more injury to their egos, the following match involved France. And France has a player, Paul Pogba, not to be confused with Didier Drogba, who is a devout Muslim. And as he came up to the podium, alongside what was there in terms of sponsored drinks, was a non-alcoholic bottle of beer, Heineken to be sure. And Pogba said, as a Muslim, I don't do alcohol. And he moved the bottle out the way. Now, I'm not saying this was insensitivity on the part of the sponsors, but clearly, guys, the sponsors thought, well, y'all just supposed to roll with what we have here. And here are two clear incidents of somebody saying, uh-uh. Now, is this because the sponsors didn't care or did not know about the situations involving these two stars? I mean, they're not just also players, two of the best players in the world.
I'm willing to go with, you know, sight unseen. I'm willing to go with the latter because, you know, these corporate folks, they can see. I don't know if you know this or not. During the NCAA tournament, I forget who the like official drink. Let's just for shits and giggles, let's just say Fanta is the official drink of the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whenever there's a shot on TV or what have you, and I had a friend of mine who covers the NCAA tournament, he was drinking a soda, and it was apparently a non-NCAA sponsored drink.
Oh, no.
Which gives me flashbacks of Hitler Youth, but that's a whole other story in and of itself. They basically told him, you're going to have to drink it in a, for lack of a Fanta cup. And he says,
shit.
Huh? Because the corporate, you know, because yeah. This was a buddy, a mutual friend of ours who covered the NCAA tournament, and they literally walked up to him and said, you know, you can drink your thing, but you got to drink, you know, you can't drink it from the bottle, can, or whatever. You have to put it in this NCAA
cup. That's like the Olympic Games when Michael Jordan did what he did.
Oh, yeah, the Nike, yeah. The whole Reebok Nike, whatever. And Michael, being the corporate whore that he is.
Yes.
Made sure that he so all of a sudden he got, you know, I think when he put like a flag, he put a flag over whatever. but it's pretty. And the funny thing is, you know, back then it was somewhat scandalous, but now, you know, since even before the pandemic, I know, you know, the WNBA had been like, you know, shameless with the corporate stuff on their uniforms and what have you, but now it's with all it's with all the teams now. Like, you watch the hockey, if you watch any of the hockey, every team has a corporate sponsor. If you watch, and now the NBA, all the teams have some sort of a sponsor on their jersey or what have you. And I mean, it's you know, if you're watching the game, it's not bothersome. I mean, it hasn't gotten to the level of NASCAR where they basically put everything but their baby mama's picture on the car. But it's getting there. I remember. I think it was about 20 years ago. The Bears were corporately sponsored by, I want to say Visa or some. It was like the, you know, the Bears season is being brought to you by, you know, so and so. And it's, you know, and see, now it's more, I don't think it's more sophisticated, mind you. I think they're more whorish than that's how they make their money, because, you know, full disclosure, I worked at Nielsen Media Research. And for folks of a younger generation who may not know, Nielsen, of course, is the folks who still do the network TV ratings.
Okay.
They also do branding. You know, they do branding in regards to you know, just a whole bunch of things. But make a long story short, when I was, you know, I started off in the sports department, and they would have us, we would brand games. Like, I'll give you an example. The hockey, like you said, Gary, with the side stuff. Basically, we would code. It was called coding.
Yeah.
And we basically would code all the logos that are shown. There was a special code. If a certain thing was, you know how they'll say the Delta halftime show brought to you by Honda.
Yes.
You know, but see, we would log a mention, we would log signage, and a baseball game would take years to do. I mean, we could see they would have contracts with certain teams. Mm-hmm. And they would get a gauge as to how much signage is seen, how much things are mentioned. Matter of fact, I think the one that everybody is familiar with, you know, when the Yankees were doing, were in their run during the Joe Torre era, the sign, I think the right field sign, the I guess it's the Nobody Beats the Wiz sign.
Yeah, that's right.
Make a long story short. That thing gets seen. It can just for it being seen on a national. Now again, we were doing local games, but on a national level, that's like huge bucks.
And see
with baseball, there's signage all over. You know, you think hockey is bad. But, you know, you've got the freaking tarp, and when they do the traditional center field cam, you know, behind the pitcher, now you have the signage on the little, I forget what the hell they call them now, but, you know, that's another signage thing as well.
Yep.
And see, that led to the corporate, you know, the corporate names of the arenas. You know, it was, you know, like, what was it? I guess your friend and his, Jerry Jones, was one of the first ones that did that with Nike Texas Stadium.
Yep.
And see, again, it was subtle. It's sort of like, remember the book back in the day, Subliminal Seduction?
Yes.
Basically, that subliminal, you know, now we get subliminal seduction to the 34th power. Because
that's true.
Every, you know, you cannot watch it this way. I'm not even talking about the obnoxious FanDuel and DraftKings folks. Let's just keep them out of the equation. Just signage, just the signage alone is buku bucks. And see,
yeah, you read about that.
And see, with so many of these things, like you know, the the seventh inning stretch brought to you by, you know, our guy, you know, put this way. Now, in Canada, I think I told you, I was watching a lot of the playoff games last year on TSN and CBC.
Right.
Let's put it this way. I need to find someone to put a hit on Tim Horton because I can't see that sign anymore. I can't. Tim Horton is probably a wonderful man. He probably feeds his children and they love him to death. I can't do Tim Norton anymore. I mean, Tim Horton. I'm sorry. Tim Norton, too. Can't do him either. But it's just
get him
and certain, you know, yeah, certain things. I mean, and, you know, and again, it's been a slow, subtle thing because remember, back in the day, Monday Night Football, these halftime highlights are brought to you by Metropolitan Life.
That's exactly right. Yes, they did, you know.
And now, as a pitcher, this is how crazy it's getting.
Yep, I know where you're going.
Strategically
placed in the right hand corner. And see, the thing is, it's not actually on the field. It's superimposed superimposed. Matter of fact, I'll go you one further. If you now, let's say you're watching a Yankee game on the Oh Hell No Network, and now the game could also be seen also on the mouse. Now,
right.
If you turn on yes, they'll have a certain kind of signage. You know, it might be,
right.
you know, whatever. But you go watch that same game on ESPN and get that same broadcast and get that same picture, the mouse superimposes programming. Like late in the game, that obnoxious up next SportsCenter.
And they're
hawking, like, you know, Thursday at 9 WNBA basketball, or and watch the NBA games in the playoffs. Now, to their credit, they don't have a problem pushing other networks because you can, like, if you watch, they realized, you know, of course, when you're, you know, they were fiscally ignorant then, because now they know, you know, what kind of bucks that brings in. So now they literally beat you and your mama with it now, whenever you watch it, because. Because we're watching Game 7 the other night on ABC with the Nets in Brooklyn. They were, you know, if you see on the sidelines in between the "Go Nets, go" and this is for Brooklyn signage. They were hawking Game 7 on TNT the next night.
Okay,
but. And then if you watch Game 7 on on Sunday night, they were pushing Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals on ESPN. But the, you know, and now if it's a TNT, now if it's a Turner game, they're going to push the Turner stuff, of course. You know, you're going to get, you know, and the winner of this game will take on the Milwaukee Bucks NDAs, you know, and everything.
Right.
But see, again, it's been a slow thing, literally from, you know, metropolitan life at halftime to now,
mm-hmm.
where you can, you almost see, because no home teams wear white and road teams wear gray anymore. Nine times out of ten, what I do now to see, I have no idea who the home team is. So
mm-hmm.
I look on the court. Now,
there you go.
I know I've seen the garden, I grew up watching the garden court, so I know it when I see it. It's like, oh, the Knicks are home. Or if I'm watching two teams that I'm, okay, let's say it's Milwaukee and Phoenix. Don't say that
mm-hmm.
too loud because the networks won't like that. But
that's right.
I literally look at the middle of the floor, what logo's there. If there's a big, mm-hmm. if there's a big ugly deer, I'm in Milwaukee.
Yes.
If there is a big blazing sun, I'm in Phoenix. You know,
mm-hmm.
if the home team is wearing MLK jerseys in lieu of their Lester Maddox jerseys, it's probably Atlanta. So when did this start?
I'm looking at big damn bird in the middle of the floor, a big damn bird.
Walk their hawk. Yes. See, it's been a hawk. Now, me personally, the only red bird that I've ever seen is a cardinal. But you don't want to fuck people's minds up and
there's
say the Atlanta Cardinal.
The center court. We got Radio Reggie in the mix as well.
There could be people on acid or on drugs watching the game. And they're saying,
T-Mac, when you got a 115-degree temperature outside and people walking barefoot, they're definitely on drugs in Arizona. What can I say?
But this is Reg. It's a dry. Yeah. So basically, forgive me, Lord, your asshole will be dry by the end of the day. I guess it's going to be that damn hot,
Is that before or after the pass is snagging? But, guys, I just want to throw something to Pop real quick. I just got to say, Judge Kavanaugh, I know we're talking NBA, but I was literally shocked. I fell off from my seat when I read his ruling on the NCAA case where he told, and I quote, the NCAA is not above the law. I had to do a double take. I said, what the hell sandwich going on here?
This has been something that has been happening slowly because,
mm-hmm.
look, the NCAA has been a paper lion for quite a while. Now they are literally learning just how insignificant they are now. And I just, it's funny. You know the first thing I thought of when all of this happened?
What?
Maurice Claret.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
He tried. They did
a
lot of black folks backstabbing.
It's in many ways, and I know this may be a stretch for some folks, but I think you guys will understand what I'm saying. He's sort of like the Kurt Flood of college sports in the sense
he was way
ahead of his time, and they were going to make an example of him to the point, mm-hmm. but see, in the long run, it wound up hurting him because, see, now the whole thing of, the likeness and what, and plus what they've been getting away for freaking years.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. It's again, this is something that should have happened years ago. And I just wish, that he and so many other folks could have, reaped the benefits of it.
Brought that lawsuit, they did.
Exactly.
But the thing that gets me is that no kind of A&T has not won national athlete before, track athletes going to the Olympics. God bless them. But now this opens the door for a lot of young people running track that otherwise had to go overseas. Now they can run track in some of these colleges. And You know what really pissed me off when I hear conservatives run their mouth off? First of all, they're pissed off by the one and done in basketball. You know they're mad about that. That's why Szczesny is tucked his tail between his legs and drinking out after this year. Number two, in my humble opinion, when it comes to this bullshit talking about, well, you know, this money in shape from other schools and other sports. Well, then when COVID-19 came out, they were pissed and moaning about giving the women an opportunity. They were mad about that. So it's bullshit about what these conservatives run their mouth talking about the money they spent. No, they spent the money where they want to spend.
End of the day, and look, end of the day, because see, the bullshit argument to me is that, oh, you know, it's taking away the amateurism and it's taking away from the game.
Exactly.
And I'm like,
exactly.
y'all been taking from these kids for years. You know, we always mentioned it, like, you know, you want to have these 1940 values, but you want to cash them 2021 checks.
Motherfucking right.
You know, I had a conversation about this very issue this week about kids in school, and I told the guy, look, Iowa State University, for 9 weeks, they get 150,000 people in their stadium.
$180,000.
You mean to tell me that you cannot share the $180 a piece for each of those seats?
Gary, they can't, and you know why they can't.
And Alabama got their own airport.
You got Eric Sanway and the professor with us both. But let's get back to the impetus of this, what Cristiano Ronaldo did. When he said kids should not drink Coke, they should drink water, it made a 1.6% drop in Coca-Cola's net profit. That represented $4.6 billion. And when Paul Pogba came to the podium after France came on, there were two bottles of Coke next to the bottle of non-alcoholic Heineken beer. Well, first of all, you know the guy's Muslim, so why would you put a fucking bottle of beer at the podium, even if it was non-alcoholic? You know doggone well that won't fly. And they already know certain players and their quirks or whatever requirements needed to appease them. The advertisers just went buck wild with this shit. But think about that. Ronaldo opened his mouth and said no Coke, and they lost $4.6 billion with a B. Now, I don't know about y'all, but we've seen people have that kind of draw power that if they say something, everybody will back up. So
sure. Keep
that in mind as we carry on in this, because I want everybody later on to think about if they had the stroke to do this themselves and they had the chance to endorse a product they like or a service they like, which one would it be? Would it get everybody's attention? But, gentlemen, let's get back to where Reggie left us, because this leaves open the name, image, and license situation for athletes, student athletes, who were getting screwed before. As Reggie said, Ed O'Bannon got jerked by it. Other people, athletes, got jerked by it. And now the NCAA has to do a 360 and flip over and do a breakdance to try to appease folks. And I don't think it's working this time, gentlemen. Can somebody help me here?
Oh, no, this has been a slow death. It's you know, we've mentioned this a bunch of times, where, you know, the NCAA is just it would be nice to see, you know, we'd probably be doing them a favor by saying they're just a figurehead, but they're even less than that now. Look at, you know, other than the basketball tournament, you know, they don't sponsor the playoff. The College World Series, I believe, is also is also separate. And of course, yeah, and the bowl games, every one of those bowl games has a sponsor.
Yep.
So again, now Now, their baby.
Anything the NCAA has to put on the table, go ahead.
Yeah. They, let's put it this way. They have, their, you know, again, take away the NCAA basketball, the men's tournament, because they, because as they've already shown you, they don't give a damn about the women's tournament, even though the women's tournament does generate a couple of, you know, it's not going to generate the kind of money that the men do, but, you know.
You talking about the box
trunks,
women tournament, how they treat the women like shit?
They don't even, I don't even think they get boxes anymore. I think they get Lunchables, don't they?
They get Huggies.
Yeah, it's this has been a slow, gradual thing because the NCAA is toothless now. There's nothing left for them now.
Yeah.
And
they thought
in their arrogance that, the legislators would help them. But see, think about it. Most of these guys and gals have allegiances to certain schools, and
that's right.
And again, let's be fair. They're not high moral people. These are the same people that will give you a Juneteenth holiday, but then will ban the reason why the hell we have Juneteenth on the book.
Exactly.
But, that's another 2 hours show in and of itself. But they're gonna play to their interests, because who's to say that Mitch McConnell, with all the other backdoor deals that he's doing, doesn't get a little kickback from the Tennessee Vols? Kentucky Wildcats.
When Cracker Barrel backs the Battle of the Bands in Houston, Texas, let's tell you how much they're gone. But I got to throw Professor a fastball. Now, Professor, where does the HBCUs fit in all this craziness? Because it scares me to death that we're already getting cherry-picked in basketball and now football from the five families. In your opinion, Professor, what do you think the HBCUs need to do to help themselves in this situation?
We don't have that much time, but I'll just put it. I'll give you the popcorn version.
Cliff Notes version.
Mm-hmm. They need to stop treating sports like extracurricular activities, and start and become involved in the sports entertainment business like every other
HBCU. Yes.
And they're gonna have to play hardball and raise money. I mean real money. I'm not talking about waiting for some billionaire's wife to throw his money at HBCU because she wants to spite him in other situations like that.
Oh shit.
I mean, that's just my humble opinion. And see, the irony in all this, I just got to, I'm almost finished writing a piece for my book on women's basketball pertaining to Title IX and how, matter of fact, I watched the coach from Rutgers, Vivian Stringer, who got her start at Cheney State took little Cheney State, which had at that time maybe 700 or 800 students, maybe 1,000 students, but little Cheney State, which was a quote independent institution, and they beat NC State, and I forget the other team they beat, but then they ended up losing in the finals against, I want to say, La Tech. But, if there was ever any question about how great of a coach she was and was going to be, she took them down to the wire in the first NCAA championship. And why was this, in 1982, why was this the first NCAA championship? because the NCAA has spent enough money to field every program for the next 20 years. That much in court, because they said we haven't. Well, they basically said we ain't going to support the Zephyrs out there on the court, and they fought tooth and nail with all these big schools you want to name, HBCUs, and smaller colleges on the front end. They went ahead and started doing their thing, NAIA school and those kind of things. But then, being the bullies that they are, the AIAW was facilitating women's basketball and others in about nine other sports. At the end of the day, when the court said, the courts gave them what I call a Russian ultimatum. Here, the tie's going to be, and put a gun to their head and a pin in their hand. Okay, you got a choice of the gun or the pin. So they decided to go with the pin. They signed off. And so immediately they took over. And mind you, half the schools, now mind you, overall they were ignoring the, at that time, the four families of HBCUs, because in the 10 to 12 years, it was 10 to 14 years of AIAW, I think Federal City came close once, and by the time the end came for the AIAW, Federal City didn't even exist any longer. And they, add to that the fact that Cheney, like Federal City, operated as an independent institution. Although in Cheney's case, they were participating in the Penn State Athletic Conference. But in basketball, they function as an independent, which was what their men did too, if I'm not mistaken. And at the time, Coach Stringer and John Cheney were the head men and women's coaches at Cheney.
At Cheney State, yes, they were.
So with that in mind, you know, you consider two Hall of Fame coaches came out of that one little school. And it's in the edge of Philadelphia, and it's mm-hmm. like suburban Philadelphia, just like Lincoln is down the road from Philadelphia. But, you know, big thing can come out of these schools if you dig in the right places. And with that in mind, that's what our schools got to start doing. They're gonna have to go to one of my favorite reading books, and that's called Think and Grow Rich. They got to start thinking outside the box, we can't whine and dine anymore. That's the best way I can say it.
Let's look at it this way, Fred and Eric. Now you both graduated from HBCUs. Let's look at yourselves as students matriculating now for the first year with these new rules in place. So now Eric can go into business as Eric Satterwhite, Inc., and use his basketball column as a financial wedge to give himself a little extra change on the side. Now, because he's getting somewhere with his site, people know his face, and he might make some money off of this. 5 years ago, 2 years ago, Freda said, Eric, you can't do this. You can't have a site covering basketball while you're a student. What do you think you're doing? Educating people? So, Eric, now that the script's flipped and you could actually make money off your name, image, and likeness, what would your stratagem be for doing school, or what would you tell a young person who's like-minded to do?
What's that in effect, fellas? How's everything
What's
going?
Up,
good.
All right. It's all good. I mean, interesting. You know, I guess my perspective is somewhat skewed a little bit to that process, because for so many years, you know, if you were a scholarship athlete and, you know, you were highly mm-hmm. recruited, you were getting paid anyway. Just mm-hmm. wasn't official.
Mm-hmm.
just was not official, right? You know, you see situations where a person gets recruited and Danny Manning, right? You know, they hired his father as an assistant coach. Mill Wagner, you know, DeJuan Wagner, son of the top. Kyler Perry hired him as an assistant coach. So there's always been, you know, formats of pay, you know, forever. Mm-hmm. You know, and everyone who's in that loop knows that, right? You know, they were taken care of. There was a booster here. I mean, people talked about John Wooden, you know, and they said that the fifth wing of the pyramid of John Wooden that he did not document was that number one booster that took care of all the players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, took care of abortions, took care of, you know, clothing. You know, and there's pictures of all his prime players sitting at a dinner table, you know, off campus.
Got weed for Walton.
You know, I mean, he went back to, quote-unquote, Alcindor, right? And so there's been these backdoor scenarios forever. You know what I mean? And so now the shift of, you know, someone publicizing and making it matter, unfortunately, the reality is, and this is not to denigrate, most of these individuals who come in as jocks, they're purely jocks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Purely jocks. They're not going to pin something together and, like, write that column. But there'll be a few, right? But then those are usually at schools where no one's paying attention, right? You know, it could be an Ivy League school. It could be the Patriot League, you know, those upper northeastern universities, things of that sort.
Yeah.
Are you going to tell me that someone at the University of Alabama who's going to get, you know, what, they draft, what, 8 first-round picks a year maybe out of that university?
Mm-hmm.
You think any of those players are going to start pinning anything as well as they take care of them? Plus, also, many of these facilities, you can look at a team like Arkansas, right, in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Arkansas, when's the last time Arkansas won anything in the SEC football? But if you look at their facilities, I think they could rival anything the NFL can put out.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of money flowing. And what's so mythological about the process that has to be explored as well is that during the pandemic, we've seen for a fact that these schools who were maintaining the collegiate basketball schedule were not on campus. They were in hotels, sequestered.
There you go.
So are you saying that they really came there for academics?
Cost of doing business.
No.
That's what it was.
It was all about.
All I want to know, Eric, is about that airport in Alabama. Who's putting the bill for that?
right. I mean, Alabama University. I mean, shoot. Alabama players get drafted to the NFL and go, hey, what's the problem with your facility? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Some of these facilities and support thing, I mean, just are unimaginable for anyone in this current tense to see the level of finance and supporting because of those TV contracts, right, and working on these deals. So as far as, you know, I mean, O'Bannon came out, he did his thing, but what's really been the fallout to that, right? You know, who really got anything out of that deal? They got some slivers.
Nobody got shit.
That's my point.
In comparison, and you brought up Alabama, think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Last year in the draft, there were roughly 9 players from the University of Alabama who went in the first 3 rounds.
Right.
Now,
every year they got 5 or more, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So
at the very least, just
added the bonuses. 5 were drafted in the first round, so you know they got somewhere between 15 and 5 million in that first round. The 5 in the second round, 1 million, 5
Absolutely.
Million. Third round, $500,000 to a million. So Alabama doesn't have to make any case to draft anybody. They can simply say, look at our prospectus, and you'll see that over $75 million was doled out to draft prospects out of the University of Alabama, and cha-ching, you sign your John Henry on a dotted line.
Absolutely. I mean, Saban turns over 8 coaches a year and still rolls.
Yeah.
Eight coaches, I mean, guys come in, they're off to head coaching jobs elsewhere or coordinators jobs all over the nation, right? And so when you started looking at the monolithic, I mean, University of Oregon sponsored by Nike, you know, I mean, Phil Knight, you know what I mean? They got more uniforms than 20 yeah. police.
Like 200
across the country. You know what I'm saying? You know, and then they, and then they get these copyrighted colors. No NFL team does that. So when you start talking about collegiate athletics and the money behind it, to think that this little NCAA pinch is going to have some dude at Norfolk State University pen a blog and, you know, get a national attention, it's going to be only built on your success, you know what I mean, and how you can dime. And so we all in, so these things are so effing illusionary, you know, because when O'Bannon came out with his part, it was like, oh, my God, the image, we got control. Oh, you know, he sued it.
Eric. Okay, Eric, I got a quick question. Right now, North Carolina A&T track is at the highest as far as ever been as far as people recognize that program.
Very awesome.
Especially with four of their young people going to the Olympics. If you were there, what would you tell A&T to do to market their brand?
I mean, you're right, because they got a lot of bandwidth, you know, coming from that. And you're correct. And what I like about what they've been able to do is the fact that we all know that when it comes down to what makes your money, right, it's your actual position of what you're doing as an athlete, right? So whatever people can say about Brady, he's about his craft. They can say what they want, but he's about his craft first because he knows that's what makes the money, right? And so I got to master that. So what A&T has, they're going to be this incredible story, you know, in the Olympics. And I really hope they will do exceedingly well, because then it's going to be a global story, and that's going to really bump up, you know, A&T just by their performance. So they're literally in a position now that after if they come back with honors and they come back with gold medals and they've already won national championships, that Olympic is still the stage for track, right? And
absolutely.
You still have that. It's still the stage, right? Usain Bolt proves that every time. Usain wins all these world championships, but the Olympic is where he gets off. You know, and so A&T, what I would really hope them brothers would do is just go there and just do your thing in, you know, in Japan. Then when you come back, they're going to have so much ammunition to put together a product at A&T and a marketing game plan off these Olympians, and having that word Olympian behind their thing as an HBCU, which is now becoming a little more prominent in people's eyes, that they're in a really tremendous position to do so. But the way I see A&T from me, from my perspective, is just more or less like, you know, what my father used to always tell me. He's like, listen, you got the talent, you're going to come up. It don't matter where you are, you're going to come up. You know, and then from there you can build off. So A&T's got a phenomenal opportunity, to your point, Reg, to just – you know, do things. But I would also kind of temper it, because just continue, keep the pressure off, you know, them young men the way it is right now. Let them go to Japan. Then let's see what the resort, what the results are, and then just go bonkers with pushing the deal. You know what I mean? Go wide and broad with that, because we'll go wide and broad with it here, you know, in other aspects of places. But, yeah, so that's a really good part. But, again, this NCAA malarkey, you know, and it's a celebration bullshit about a few things. I mean, listen, the guys were getting broken off forever and still are, you know, and still getting paid. I mean, Herm Edwards is about to go through, you know, I mean, he violated some of the NCAA rules and tried to cut corners and shit, tried to play the NFL smartest guy in the room shit. Now he's about to, he won't be able to say this these days. It's about winning. Well, Herm, you definitely took on the college motif with some of the shit you've been pulling off over there. You know what I'm saying? Where our schools are not doing those things. But so if a guy picks up our lunch tab, right, or there's a booster there, someone knows, hey, man, listen, get this guy a call. How do you think these players are getting their parents to travel these games?
Come on.
How do you think they're getting there? You think they're fucking getting there because they got a discount travel voucher on, you know, some online site? The universities have divisions on campus cutting those deals.
Yeah, and Arizona State isn't even a major when it comes to shit like that. If this was the SEC we were talking about, you were talking serious money. All the other shit, as Eric likes to say, this is crappiest manifestos. These motherfuckers are about making money and pimping these motherfuckers out. That's really what the deal is. We heard
they can look at the SAT scores, right? These guys have got to come in with these placement tests. Right? They can look at them placement tests knowing this dude ain't going to come in here and try to build a business.
Thank you.
Although, 100. Mike, also, I think in regards to Arizona State, because there is a quote unquote Pac-12 network, it's they're still lower in the food chain, but they can use that network can be used to their advantage, and they can. Let's put it this way. You know how they talk about the Notre Dame's Subway alumni. It may never get to that, but they still have, who knows? Because of the Big Ten network,
Arizona State's football complex and support mechanism and training tables and workout rooms and can rival anybody, and they haven't won anything, okay?
Yeah,
and so my point is, when you think about Wisconsin and Michigan, I mean, you walk in these places, you're like, why would I ever want to leave campus with this level of support? Yeah, but you know, but unfortunately, you know, he did the corner cut, and then you got David Shaw right there at Stanford. You know, and Shaw, you know, can still recruit nationally. He's got to deal with those academic challenges, right? But he puts together a nice squad for the most. Turns out some Sunday players too, NFL players.
Right.
But but he still can't match Arkansas's facilities.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's what we're talking about here.
No, that's what we're talking about, the work environment, because they've already signed a contract, which means you're making zero money. So what purposes are there for you? And, Fred, I bring this back to you because now I'm going to ask, if you're going to school now, knowing what you know about the NIL laws, what would you be able to change as you go in there as a student athlete trying to make a little sum on the side?
What do you mean on the side?
As far as the NIL agreement is concerned, some of that
on the side stuff would be a pay cut for a lot of these guys.
That's my point. That's a pay cut for
those who don't know. There is a person of the Negroid persuasion who is finally a true head coach at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He used to have this uncle. He's deceased now. He used to have this uncle that lived down the street from the uncle of Michael Jordan, who was down the street around the corner from James Worthy. If they were in any black neighborhood, you could say they could throw rocks between the houses. Well, where they lived in Pinehurst, the houses are big, so the lots are bigger, so it's a little harder to throw the rocks from one yard to the other. But my point is simply this. These uncles took care of these guys.
All the time.
There was a guy who played for NC State. His mom and dad were factory workers. He came, if you remember what a 442 was?
Yep.
Okay. This is what this young man drove. He was there doing the coach that died of cancer.
Jim Valvano.
He was there doing the Valvano years.
Right.
Homeboy had a cherry red 442.
Those were
the that you could hear coming down the street.
Right.
You knew he was coming, but you couldn't even see him. You knew he was going. And my point is simply this. This on the side, some might be a pay cut. Because there's already so much money in play. At the university, but see, the difference would be now I got to come up with something other than my quote unquote talent. And see,
exactly.
This whole thing, the whole thing with image and likeness, and you're gonna start seeing more of this because you already see it when it comes to music on on Facebook. Because they can't control any of this stuff, it's gonna be be harder to move pictures, move you know, because like you know, like the Facebook and other platforms like that right now.
Can I chime in on that real quick? Because players right now have their own thing they call a vlog, a video blog, vlog, V-L-O-G. So these are scholarship athletes that will take you all through their facilities, male, female, and then they'll show you, hey, what it's like to be a highly recruited player, vlog, then what it's like to be a college athlete, vlog, how I start my day, vlog, what do I train with, vlog. So they're already pushing that agenda, and then guess what? If there's going to be a number of hits, they're going to get monetized on YouTube anyway. So in other words, the athletes. I mean, Reggie Bush, right? You know, they decided to turn the turncoat on Reggie. I guess he got arrogant, so then they decided to talk about what Reggie was taking and doing, and what was happening with his family when he was at SC, right? You know, OJ got taken care of way back in the set. This shit's been going on since the concert with the Boy Scout. If you're a scholarship athlete, boots on the ground, and you've been in that environment, you already know what the TikTok is. No one talks. No one's going to give it. No one's giving it up. So there's no change here. Guys are doing their vlogs. They're doing their videos. They have their social media. They have their Instagrams. You know what I mean? And so they can turn that into... they have that. They're rolling with that shit right now. That's why they have to kind of let loosen the bootstraps, right? So if I have if I have a vlog on YouTube, and there are hundreds of them, thousands of them, collegiate athletes all across this nation. Now everyone's getting about the same amount of love. They're not getting, you know, quote unquote Justin Bieber numbers of people hitting their web for videos. They're not even coming close. So they're not able to monetize those at a real level right now because no one's interested with a punter from Iowa's vlog unless people from Iowa are high school kids or maybe people in the conference or someone who just happened to stumble across the shit. But no one's really rolling to that. Now, you mentioned that, and I want to tie this into this thing because it's irrelevant what's happening with this NCAA thing on the overall because you mentioned Ronaldo, right? So Ronaldo has 300 million Instagram followers.
Thank you.
No one's close.
Thank you.
No one's close to him. So no LeBron, none of these American athletes can pale to his numbers on a global level. And the Gatorade's owned by Coca-Cola and Sprite and all that other bullshit that these American brothers be pushing, which is garbage.
Yep.
So this guy can swing that a needle. He's got his own military protecting him. He's the highest paid athlete. Yep. He's got a whole bunch of things in his favor. But the difference is his level of impact at 300 milli pales to some jock. Penn State University, who's going to start writing a little something, he's going to get no bandwidth on that, really. And
you're right about
spend
that.
So much,
that makes,
you know, you're not. And you spend,
that
you spend so much time getting, you spend so much time training, so much time allegedly doing academic work and shit. When do you have the time to sit around and try to side hustle when you're already getting taken care of by the university? Some friends talking about dudes floating 442s with the dual exhaust. I mean, LeBron was floating the H2 Hummer as a high school senior.
Thank you. That's right. You remember that.
I mean,
the
trickle-down effect globally is just not there.
This is going to be so little impact monetarily for these athletes. You got to consider what Ronaldo is doing. Just as Eric said, with that many Instagram subscribers, he is, and not LeBron James, La Vaca del Dinero. But having said that, you got to also consider the fact that incentivizing may be part of the college scene now in earnest. Let's say Fred is an Outland Trophy candidate coming out of his sophomore year. Okay, now there's no fine print in this document that says, Fred, we're going to hook you up if you become an Outland Trophy candidate. But somehow a booster has dropped $10,000 in Fred's hand because he's in one of the five families, and one of the boosters already said that he would pay $10,000 to every member of the traveling team to make sure that they hooked up. that $780,000, and he was speaking about it like it was a welfare cheese sandwich. So you know this is one of those routes that may manifest itself as the NCAA doesn't have the strength or the juice to throw any compliance muscle in any direction. Am I wrong?
And Mike, to your point, you know how easy it is nowadays to move money digitally? I mean, it's so easy. Mm-hmm. In other words, if a player needs
Bitcoin
something and shit, I mean, there's so many. There's tons of them. There's so many financial apps, debit, cash ready cards, untraceable as fuck. You know what I mean, if you want to move money to a jock, you know what I'm saying? And so, in other words, it's business as usual.
Don't go get the shoebox business.
Mm-hmm. It's business as usual right now. And so this ruling, it's business as usual. So this ruling by the NCAA is, I mean, much ado about friggin' nothing. Because it's not going to change the cycle because everyone was getting all excited about this Ed O'Bannon thing. And I was one of the person in the Wolf, man, I think I'm just going to play the no comment role here because nothing's popping from this.
Amazing scenarios going down, y'all. The kids don't sound like they're all right yet, but the NCAA had to concede to this in order to not get screwed. So are we missing something here? We know the NCAA is compliant, but they're doing so grudgingly. What else can come out of this, fellas?
Well, we'll see. Stop looking at it as if the NCAA is doing, because you know they're trying to make it look like they're doing these guys a favor.
Far from it.
And beyond the five families, probably the only place that I can think of where it's legal that guys get money is West Point, Naval Academy, Air Force Academy.
They've been getting paid. They've been getting paid.
Because they get food, clothing, shelter, and in their case, from your drawers on out, your shoes, everything.
They get a financial stipend.
And don't forget the GI Bill. But, gentlemen, my question real quick. Okay, we look at the Supreme Court. Right, but we look at the Supreme Court, the rulings that Kavanaugh and this Supreme Court did under Roberts, the Chief Justice. I kind of go back in the wave machine when Muhammad Ali was granted his freedom back in the 60s with a very liberal court. And I must say, in my humble opinion, Eric, you can help me with this, it seems like this Supreme Court, I know just in this case, has kind of flipped the script on a lot of business people, especially NCAA, just like the 60s, where they kind of flipped the script for Muhammad Ali to give him his freedom. What's your thoughts on that, Eric?
I mean, yeah, the Ali story, to use T-Mac's term, we don't have enough time for the 2 hours because literally,
the Supreme Court, just about the Supreme Court.
Well, from the man, I mean, so many thoughts come to mind. First of all, anytime you go to the C-O-U-R-T court, you're playing League Elite. So it's a game. You're part of that game. And in that game, it's going to be who's going to dictate the direction in terms of what legislation is going to come into play, which means who paid the money to get it done. You know, and so we see the trickle-down effects with those aspects of how they make rulings, like they upheld Obamacare again, you know, duh. And now you're kind of moving in those directions. So as the Supreme Court weighs in, it's like, can anyone tell me any recent three decisions they made that are impacting your day-to-day life?
If you don't
have health care, maybe Obamacare, you know, upheld, but that goes back years, so that's nothing new. They just upheld what's already been on the book. What three things right now are those chief justices impacting your life when you leave your friggin' house? Three. This current court, right?
Nothing.
They not us. A lot of legislation, a lot of talk. So I don't kind of wrap my mind around those things. People are going to have to update me on what those things are, what those mandates are, because in my realm, you know, and how we move and the initiatives I'm seeing taken, I'm seeing people move unblocked to try to move forward with so many things. I'm seeing them move forward on black. Like, I talked to a government employee the other day, and I had to get verification. I was like, is it true that the federal government has 44 paid holidays for government and they create nothing but collect trillions of dollars in tax money every quarter? And mm-hmm. How does that work? And they should, the person told me that as soon as the legislation signed for Juneteenth, which is another two-hour show, it was talked about how they had their next business day off, all government employees. I said, damn, I mean, the ink wasn't dry yet. Y'all had the day off? Oh, yeah, we had the day off immediately.
Yes, they did.
Exactly. Now, that was some legislation that helped somebody with a pen real quick. They got the day off. That's something they could measure. But, you know, when it comes down to, you know, the skullduggery associated with sports and amateurism and paid and likeness in this branding environment, you know, you hear athletes talk about, well, you know, I got to be about my brand. Oh, my goodness. Great. I mean, that goes back to Chattel. That is mm-hmm. the term.
Yep.
There's no way around that. You can't modernize brand. People don't look at the etymology of words. So when you start talking about the court, okay, court means there's a game going on. Lawyers play legalese. The attorney is part of the tournament. Tourney, look at the words, at turn, tourney. It's a tournament.
Yep.
He's in the tourney. That's what an attorney is. And when you
That's
hire
right.
an attorney, you give up your loyalties and your allegiances to the attorney. That means you're no
mm-hmm.
longer representative. He's now your boss, and now he's going to play you in the attorney, in the tournament, at the court,
mm-hmm.
refereed by the judge. And then
they're dealing with you like you're dead people.
So the moment the judge draws in, he says, all rise, because everyone is sitting in the fucking crypt.
That's the truth.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So because you had asked me to go there, I had to give you some backdrop, because, I mean, we can go in on this shit and talk about this
mm-hmm.
like 24/7. And the thing is, it's like you're dealing with a dead environment.
Yes.
That's what it's based on. You know, people go in there and play that game, they're playing in the dead zone already, right? And it's already at a loss, unfortunately.
No doubt. So now here we are in this dead zone, and we're going to go from four teams to 12 teams. Patrick has done some intel on this, and I know he'll be here in a few, but the long and short of it is now a 14 tournament was already generating about $12 billion. Imagine what a 12-team tournament is going to do, because that means, am I wrong here, three games that a potential champion has to win in order to get all the money.
Michael. What the SEC has done has captured the golden goose. I guarantee you that 14 SEC will be able to enter every year.
That's right. How many times in the recent history have SEC teams filled the larder? You almost had a situation similar to the Big East and Basketball 85. There are at least four SEC teams who can make a salient argument that when it's time to collect the big check, they'll be there ready to eat the big piece of chicken. Good, Tony.
Well, we'll see. You got to remember, they also have the propaganda of the SEC network, but also whenever somebody like a South Florida or a Rutgers. Or whatever, a team that's not part
just
of the five families. Whenever they start off like 6-0 or 7-0 or 9-0, we'd rather see the fourth best team in the SEC than these guys.
That's right.
And see, it's that team.
And,
look,
and the back
Hitler,
team,
Denzel had it wrong. The SEC ain't got shit. On a lot of these,
that's right.
In the sense of having that propaganda, because see, that's a lot of it as well. The propaganda that they're going to wind up that's going to be put out there, because again, they're not when the NCAA, when we saw it in basketball, when Butler and George Mason and other schools started to, you know, make the Final Four runs. Oh, we gotta do something. We gotta do something here.
Get
this you know,
out of here.
When Butler literally became a missed basket away from knocking off Duke, that scared the bejesus out of him. And the fact that George Mason got as far as they did.
When VCU was disqualified for COVID-19 because a referee testified, they hear him and said that needs to run.
Exactly.
But to your point, though, again, you know, you mentioned the SEC, but, you know, yeah, that's true. There's some facts of what you're saying, but there are paupers to the University of Texas. I mean, University of Texas is numero uno with the dough. No, in the University of Texas, they haven't been in no national championship titles. They have their own networks. And it's a national cable network.
And
the University of Texas network.
Not to mention that little Catholic school down in that little small city down in Indiana.
Yeah, I told you not to mention that.
but remember, Notre Dame is not Texas, right? Texas is the kingpin. Number two moneymaker is Ohio State. They're one and one. They're like 1-1A. You know, and so all these – so as good as the SEC – the SEC loves Lou Saban because all those bottom feeders that we talked about, like Arkansas and teams that haven't finished, they're getting that money every time. They're getting Mississippi State, Vandy. They're getting that money every time. Every time Lou takes them to the championship game, they're all getting paid.
It's like back in the day when the Big East or the ACC would get five or six teams. Coach that, well, we should have gotten seven. And I was like, they whore themselves out worse than Michael does with Republicans.
No joke, but Mississippi and Mississippi State, who are also ran. Hold on, Reggie.
There y'all go.
Mississippi and Mississippi State, who are also ran currently and constantly in the SEC mix, know that when the day is over and the checks go in, they are guaranteed at least $5 to $10 million.
That's my point again. If the SWAC right now, the SWAC is a powerhouse of HBCUs. They don't have their own airline. They don't have their own hotel. They don't even have their own
official airline.
I don't understand it. You got all
never
these
had
teams.
I mean the Grambling story was just horrid.
Jeez.
Before that story took place, man. I mean, guys are breaking out with rashes. They couldn't get uniforms washed. Muscle milk. They had no training table. Muscle Milk brought in freights to drop off. What a great marketing game plan it was for Muscle Milk. They brought in freights. A protein drink because these athletes said we can't maintain, we can't hold our strength, we can't work out. And then, so how do they break off? They go on to these get your ass kicked tours every year by scheduling these D1 powerhouses. And that one brother that got almost killed against the University of Georgia. Those level of mismatches and mayhem is brutal. And they were talking about, I think it was one of these HBCUs, I can't recall who, I'm going to just throw it out there. I think it was Mississippi Valley State.
And they were
talking about the basketball schedule they had to play with all those D1s. Like, they were at Purdue on, hypothetical, they were at Purdue on Tuesday.
I think it was Mississippi Valley State.
Thursday they were at San Diego State. Then Tuesday they're at Michigan State. Then Friday they were at Oklahoma. It's like their first 8-9 games were all road games against D1 schools that they were getting trashed.
But the athletic
directors were pawning them off to get paid.
A human version of Pimp My Ride, basically.
They were riding too.
And then they were talking about
when you need
basketball program.
Yeah, really.
That's the sad part about it.
For real.
We got Reggie. We got Patrick Ferrer in the mix. Patrick, can you hear us?
Live in living color. What's up, fellas?
What's up,
how are
Patrick? You? What's up, family?
Patrick, we were talking about this playoff. You had some intel that you had to save. Please drop it on everybody because we're counting as we speak here in terms of the register ringing each time we speak on cash. And
one for you and one for me. Two for you and one, two for me. Three for you and one, two, three for me.
Four
for me.
Wait, talk about who? Good to be with you guys, and as usual, I will say this. I got a bunch of information, but I condensed it really to just basically. I just find it funny. You know how we talk. We don't talk conspiracy theories. We just talk common sense around here. Common sense told me, one, last year the NCAA lost a lot of money because obviously like everybody did. And ironically, on the NIL was going through, and on July 1st, 17 states have passed it for schools, for colleges. But all of a sudden, out of nowhere comes this thing, well, we have to go 12 schools in the playoffs. Ain't got a coincidence. Now,
are you saying, Patrick, that somebody said we got to make up money by any means necessary? And they would leave a brown on them?
Oh, that was his cousin. I will say this. The schools met, as you know, the schools met yesterday. The committee met yesterday to form the framework of what's going on, and then they'll meet coming the 28th to really help to warm it down, to wear it down to where they want to go. But I will say this. Now here's where it's going to get tricky. Now you know what everybody knows what the Supreme Court did. Basically, they said, anytime a Trump appointee says, this was a private company, y'all be in jail. You know,
come on.
It was that bad. But here's the trick. This is where folks are not looking at. You see the cover, you know the cover story with here's the story, but I'm a believer in the history behind the history.
Mm-hmm.
The cover story,
it
really should be this. It's going to be the congressman that, and more importantly, the lobbyists that will help the congressmen to try to get who represent the NCAA out from Arizona, where they've been meeting for the longest in these country clubs, which can't no players win because they can't afford it. They'd be NCAA violation.
Oh, shit. The plot thickens.
By
the time I get
to
Arizona.
Thank you. By the time they've gone through the legal process, but the lobbyists, along with people in NCAA are going to try to get Congress to reshape some of this stuff to where the hit will be longer. Now, people always kill me talking about whether you have a contract, you can't break a contract. This contract is due to the end of 25.
Come on.
Brother,
they just renewed it for 5 years.
So, sometime between 22 and 23, they're going to enact something. Because in January, there's going to be another meeting that they haven't announced yet. Now, here's something else. When the college presidents, all of a sudden, you're okay with them playing 14, 15 games and worry about their grades?
Patrick, you forgot the magic word. Student athletes. So, Come on now.
In the case of
North Carolina in that basket weaving class.
Yeah. In the case of the student at
it
Rutgers,
was not basket
the young man for the article in the paper, he was the captain of the team, and he said, no, stupid athlete. He didn't say student athlete. I'm not a stupid athlete. I said, that's what I'll end it like this. Guys, already, I said last week, $2 billion. I found out it's anywhere from 10 to 12 billion by the time they pull this thing off.
Patrick, is this including corporate sponsors, or is this including corporate sponsors?
It's going to say it's going to sponsorships some TV contracts are going to be rewritten to cover this. And that's the other part of it, because they have to rewrite some TV contracts to make this go through. Your people are going to, are going to say no.
Patrick, I got two words for that, and both of them is damn. We know.
Hey, what about,
you know, I can tell you
what
from,
about fans
I can tell you from, I can tell you from somebody following horse racing that this is going to be scandal laden. In horse racing, when the pick five or the pick six and the pot gets bigger and bigger, people, they start pooling their monies together to nail it. They think of all the mathematic possibilities, and they put the cash up so that they can hit it and hit it hard. We're going to see something similar happen in college football with this new concept, because think about all the boosters on campus. All right, just Texas alone, the fact that they could throw $25,000 together and bomb the tote board with a $150,000 bet—that's nothing, because we've seen whales put millions of dollars on games. But with just $150 million, if everybody plays the standard, they can empty out the pot at the casinos, or any betting line because of sheer numbers.
Mike, I want to add something. Again, there will be pressure by Congress to try to fight this off. But I can tell you right now, imagine if you put in North Carolina. Imagine if it's North Carolina, the president of North Carolina has an issue with it. Who's that billionaire that wouldn't let the sister from 1619 get a ticket? You think he's going to stop that?
That's right.
The counselor on the Senate that votes against it, he ain't going to be in Congress long.
No, his ass be on the rail.
That's right.
Hey, but Patrick, we talked about Maurice Correct earlier. What's your thoughts about when Maurice Correct was fighting the NCAA? If he was around now, in your opinion, how would that benefit him?
Maurice was the wrong person to do it. That's what it was. Yes. Maurice was wrong. Even though my man Jim Brown was behind, he was the wrong person to do it. There's conflict, and we all know in life is timing. He was the right person to do it.
He's right.
Because there's a lot of stuff I can add to it, because I know on top of that, when there are some people around you that are pushing you that aren't like people that are legitimate or would take aspect of what college football is about in Ohio, you know you ain't going to get that passed.
There you go.
And to your point, Patrick, a lot of times, you know, there's a word that someone I knew in broadcasting used to use when people were all into all the gimmickry that was around them, you know, the freebies, the club, the clique, you know, the thug life, the gangsterisms. I mean, we talked about, you know, I mean, I've talked about the Loretta Youngstown connects. You know, well before he
hit 30 for 30. It's a great 30 for 30 about that too, as well.
Well, you know, I've never seen the show, but you know, just knowing, you know, the loopholes and knowing people in places that communicate in confidence, and there's jocks that just ain't the one, like you said, because the guy I'm talking about would say they come cheap. They're into the world. They're into the hoopla. They're into all the trimmings. They can't say no. They want to pop bottles and shit. You know, they want to be the toast. They want to be all up in the video. You know what I mean? And so that's why they know your style, Mr. and Mrs. Well, I won't use the term Negro, but I just guess I did. They know your style. And that's why, you know, Branch Rickey went sifting for Jackie. He could have went with Satchel. He could have went with Gibson. He could have went with Chris Papa. He needed a cat with all due respect to the brother that had that dog in him. You know what I'm saying? But could also play the game and then turn it loose and shit and channel that energy. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there got to be not everyone, because they can ball, is the right call. And we've talked about this far too many times. So many people would be extremely disappointed if they had to spend 15 minutes with their so-called idol.
You're right about that shit.
Oh, yeah.
You're right about that shit.
Extremely disappointed.
Eric, we got a sidebar. Jackie, because, you know, the league said 2 years. Don't do shit, Jackie. Right. And then after that, You know that third year had to be the quietest year in baseball because they knew that brother was going to whoop somebody's ass if they had done the shit that they had done to him the first 2 years. So
absolutely.
Well, and that's Josh Gibson.
Right. Exactly. Satchel was throwing fucking strikeouts at 72 years old, whatever age he was,
he was still in
the majors.
Right.
But Satchel, you know, with all those, you know, accoutrements and requirements he had, it wasn't the case. And that's why they had to bring in Campanella, who was a little more, you know, play the game a little more, and he hit
the demographic too because he was a black Italian.
Exactly. Exactly.
No shit.
And then Big Nuke. You know, who never got the real respect. He got, you know, Don Newcomb, right?
Yes,
absolutely. But it took a dude that had it. So when you GM, and anyone who's GM'd or anything of trying to put together any kind of sports team, you got to really bring in machinations above the talent.
Exactly.
You just can't go on the talent shit.
And to piggyback on that, Eric, on an athletic level, you know, you got to remember, Jackie was a guy – that baseball wasn't his best sport. This was a guy that was the best tennis player in the state of California at 13. This is a guy that still had Pac-10 basketball and football records for almost 40-50 years. Even Larry Doby, Larry Doby won I think it was like a three-time All-State player in high school.
I mean, Goose Tatum, right? Goose Tatum of Harlem Globetrotter played for the Indiana Clowns, you know, first baseman, right? He was super dynamite. But the thing is, again, remember, you know, when you start crafting these squads and you start putting together that guy who's going to be your phenotype, your template. You know what I mean? Just to get him to be the cat that's going to set the standard in the stage, you got to have that right cat. And so oftentimes, too, you can't go on talent. You know? Yeah. I mean, Jackie wasn't the best brother in the Negro Leagues, man, but he was the guy that had the fire. And so when you put a team together, you got to have those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you had put Jackie out there, like, for the draft or whatever, he wasn't going to be a first-round pick. He was not going to be a first-round pick.
I mean, why did a guy like Buck Williams, right, you know, got with almost 20 years in the league, he was a great locker room dude. Juwan Howard sat on the bench from Miami. I mean, Udonis Haslam, right? UD ain't going to play anytime. UD got a uniform as long as he can get up and down the court and if he can pass the NBA physical, he got a uniform.
Mm-hmm. And this is last year. That's what happened. And Eric, your point's well taken, which is part of the problem we always talk about here with analytics, which you got GMs.
Don't get me started with that.
You got fantasy league GMs this doesn't measure these numbers to fit this position. You need to have some veterans, some young players, and some leaders.
And you need that go getter. Yeah, you gotta have. I mean, so Rodman, you know, when Rodman went to Chicago, you know, I mean, he had some interesting years after Detroit, right? Bouncing around, but when he went, but the time he got to Chicago, they didn't worry about it because they know MJ could control him and Pippen, right? They could deal with him strong because he had respect for Jordan's skill set, so he could like kind of ride with that a little bit, but. That was the mix, and then Phil could deal with all his zaniness. Let him go to fucking Vegas for 2 weeks during the season and miss four games and shit, and then still put him in the starting lineup when he comes back, right? Meta world peace, you know. You got to manage Meta. You know, Meta's a really good dude, man. You know what I mean? Like I said, I know him personally.
Man,
I mean, I was honored when he introduced it to his pops at the Vegas Summer League. We've talked a lot, but Meta, you know, I mean, he's Queensbridge through and through.
Exactly.
You know, and so, and you know, if it's gonna get, if the block's going to get hot, he may let some hands go.
Truth be told, Phil Jackson was Dennis Rodman before Dennis Rodman.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, he was raised with them brothers with the Knicks, you know.
Stuff like that. And then when he became a valued member, all of a sudden he was eclectic. Yeah.
You got to remember.
But Phil at the same time, too, with that, all that Native American heresy and reading books and burning sage, Phil was into some really interesting psychological issues. And I'll just leave it there.
You know, Mike, I want to add something to this Image League for the college.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what's going to be interesting. Like I told y'all last week, a week before, about some of these political views by some states would have an effect on recruiting in some places. It might not be mass right now, but the aspect is out there for a lot of people. Here's what you need to watch. You know, 17 states have already said, yes, we will file the NIL.
You got the NIL.
The likes and images can have it. But which state is going to – now, each state can control it. Which state is going to have the most latitude for players? As we start recruiting to get to what conference, to build what team, to where you can get the most out of the aspect of what this image is all about. Be very mindful of that. And those states that you have to watch the common committee say, well, we can't go so far. Imagine Alabama. Imagine Tommy Turnbull, who's a senator now. Well, I don't think you can do something. Saban's going to call him. You want your team to keep winning? You want your job? Watch what you need to watch out for.
How about that?
Well, we
he's going to be his own. He's going to be his own lobbyist.
We extrapolated earlier on Alabama, and you got to know in a 12-team tournament, that means at least another 5 to 6 draftees. If Alabama's draft class is over 15, we are talking about a cumulative potential bonus somewhere between $250 and $300 million.
Every year. Every year.
Every year.
And you know what?
Every year, man.
It's the state's pro team.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, and then the other thing is, if you know, if you hook up with Saban, like Sarkisian, right? Sarkisian had some issues, right?
Exactly.
Then he got fired from the gigs. Then he brought him in as offensive coordinator, and now he's the head coach of Texas. You know, and then you think about Charlie Strong, what he went through to Texas. Charlie Strong is not on the sidelines, but he sits in the Alabama threshold and the hierarchy of some kind of defensive analysis. They got enough money to pay Charlie Strong and to say, fuck it, you ain't got to design the defense. Just give us your intel, your mind, your brain, and your defensive analysis and weigh in. And Saban's comfortable enough ego-wise to bring in all that, you know, brain power like he brought in Kiffin, you know, when Kiffin came in. You know what I'm saying? It was like, yo, you know, I don't care about your bullshit. You got some offense, man, run this because I got some horses for you. And so he's just cycling that through, man. And they operate at a whole different premium.
Eric, you know, that's a very good point that we have to give Saban a lot of credit. That when he wants to win, you know, when you come in his house, you know the rules. And he lets you flourish. A lot of coaches can't do that, guys. You'll know that.
That's
true.
They're not going to hire a guy that can take their job, to your point. You're right.
It's sort of like player evaluation in the sense of I'm going to play to your strengths, not trying to put a square peg in a round hole in a sense. They're going to play to your strengths,
but a lot of guys can't do it. A lot of guys can't.
Very insecure, exactly. They're too insecure.
And see.
Right.
The one reason why I can't give it up. That's the exact. See, when they keep talking about, when they always talk about, you know, the greatest ones of all time and whatever like that, because see, think of all the coaching trees over the years, whether you're talking the Dungy tree, whether you're talking the Lombardi tree, whether you're talking the Parcells tree or what have you. Look, Bill Belichick's tree is a fucking stump. Because
Patricia? No, you can't be talking about Matt Patricia.
You gotta call him by his real name, Captain Lou Albano.
There was alleged reports there was some association with perversion as well, but those were alleged.
Exactly. Oh, exactly.
Romeo Quinnell was the best coach, and he didn't have a winning record.
Mike, mm-hmm. something about a goat and a beard. That's all I'm gonna. That's all I'll elaborate on.
Romeo Crennel was on his sideline once, right?
Yes, he was. He's got the best record.
He's more.
I think
Romeo's more of a Parcells prodigy than he is a Belichick.
Okay, that's true. But you got to remember,
right now,
if I can flip back for a little bit, the reason that Saban was successful where he was because he came up to the big house. And they told him, go the fuck back home. He couldn't get away with that shit in Miami. So he understood there's no place back
home.
Sure. There's no place back home. And he went the fuck back to Alabama.
That's some truth there. And Saban was on Belichick's staff in Cleveland.
Yes, that's true.
And take this in mind. And just so happened, when you talk about Miami, it's probably right now his best person to fulfill some of the things that, as a coach now, is Flores in Miami, the brother.
I agree. I like Flores.
And that GM in Miami, he's making them draft picks, man.
And those trades, and those
free agent signings. You got to pop.
Mm-hmm.
If they just leave Tua the hell alone and let him play, I think they'll be okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Please.
That's right.
You know.
I mean, what university did Tua go to?
The University of Tuscaloosa at Alabama.
And that's another thing. As we begin to morph into the football season and the clowns. And who are saying who can do what? I always start spitting out. We don't know if he can play. Wait a minute! Didn't you say he was the best thing?
What were you fucking
bread,
looking at?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you really want to put Fraud Patrick back there again?
And what's worse, the players support him. I heard a guy on we have a show here Football Focus around here, and the guy was talking about we don't know if he's going to stay this year. With Phil Simpson, who gets my nerves because he couldn't come up a damn league. don't get me started him. But come on, I mean, give me a break. The guy's legs almost came off. He had one year with his backup. Let the young man grow. Let the young man and these people kill me. Well, he got to play. No, he ain't got to play. Let his ass sit for a year and develop a game. This notion of putting guys out there letting play,
right.
I don't believe in it.
Yeah. I have to admit, I'm not gonna lie. I was thinking that Mr. Fields could play this year, but you know what? In the long run, maybe it will be better to see how Andy Dalton can't do it, so he can learn.
You gotta remember, Tony. That mindset doesn't change, especially at the quarterback position. If he is not Super Nigger from Jump Street, they will bench him black ass in New York.
Thank you very much.
I mean, Mike, you're right, because where's Vince Evans when you need him?
Thank you, Vince Young, or
Vincent Jackson.
Wasn't he the last brother of any significance that was a brother quarterback in Chicago? Was it Vince? Was it someone after him?
No, I can't remember anybody. You know who it was?
It was Slash.
Cordell Stewart.
Oh, Cordell, for a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, Vince had more years, right?
Vince had more years. He was in the 70s, 80s, right? Eric, are you talking 1970s or 1870s here with Vince? Because I know he was in there somewhere.
No Bronco Nagurski days, you know, coming a little fast forward than that.
I don't want to say I don't want to say Vince Evans is old, but he wasn't a waiter at the Last Supper, but he damn sure was a busboy that night, at the very least.
And I mean, well, Vince went to Tuscaloosa with Sam the Man Cunningham and put it on the Bear.
Yes.
So, you know, props to Vince.
Uh-huh,
yes,
Yep. All of a sudden, Bear Bryant turned into Michael Stipe, losing his damn religion along the way.
No shit.
Yo, Mike, I want to throw something out from last night. You know, last night they had the position in the drafts last night for the draft on the July 29th of this year.
Yes.
It's interesting to see how things are going to develop for guys going to the league. I told you last week they got this new league for 16 to 18 year olds coming out of high school, along with the G League, to get to the NBA. You know, I'm a young ball player. I need to really think about what I'm doing, because it's going to get harder. Like Kareem said, you got a better chance of being a brain surgeon to get to the NBA.
He's right.
And with this influx of foreign players coming in, which will be highlighted by the Olympics this year, it's going to be a tough. These young men need to really think about not being caught up in the aspect of what it is to be in the NBA and everything that comes along
with
it.
You know they will.
See if you can survive and stay in the league.
You know they will, because they'll be thinking like teenagers. And you know the mindset won't allow, except for those rare exceptions, to be mentally tough enough to survive the rigors of all of that and keep yourself focused on getting work. Now, once they're in, they'll know about Europe and other avenues where they can go ply their trade. But, you know, too many of these kids are thinking like, all right, I'm a teenager. I'm going to work it like a teenager. We're talking about a different mindset than the teenagers who went hard.
They have to.
You know,
my,
like
my,
Spencer
they,
Haywood
basically,
and Willoughby and others
to,
like that.
They have to look at it from a corporate level. I mean, the basketball's there. If you can play, you can play. But you've got to look at it from a corporate. You have to look at it from a corporate level, from how you train, from what you eat, from every. I mean, you have to look at it. You literally have to look at it as a as a career. You literally
I would recommend a kid do 2 years in school. Only because of the fact you know what, if you can, you know what the rigors of time management, what to look for, to schedule, so you can maintain yourself. Because, like I said, talent alone ain't gonna keep you there. Because the first time somebody comes up with more talent, your butt is gone. I'm gonna give a perfect case of a guy that did that, and he spent my alma mater, Tayshaun Tate. Ain't no way out there Tayshaun Tate can be in the NBA. No way. Because he's a left-handed, not because he's left-handed, because he can't shoot. But that young man went to play 4 years of college, played 1 year in Europe, and found himself on a team where he fit his skills, and he was ready to adjust to match to be able to handle what the league is about.
Ooh, absolutely.
A lot more talent he got. But fellas, man, it's
going to
be tough
to leave. Well, you're not going to see a lot of the. Oh God, my man, I can see him right now. The long term, you know, a guy like a Dudley Bradley.
What was my man from
NC State that played for 100 years from the Valvano team? I can see him right now. I can't think of his name.
I know you're talking about.
Sidney Lowe?
Sidney Lowe.
No, not Sidney.
No. He was a guard.
There was a couple of guys. There was Gugliotta. There was Del Negro.
But I'm talking about the championship team. I can see him right now, and I can't think of his name.
Thurl Bailey.
Thank you. There it is. You know, there aren't guys, you know, you don't see. That's, to me, Even though the NBA does have some talent, Shane Battier
fits that Dudley Bradley mold.
Shane Battier
played a number of years. Well, the thing about the NBA when it comes to talent evaluation and picking the players, what people typically miss is that great all-around players don't last long. You know, isn't that interesting? It's usually a person that does one thing extremely well. That has a long career.
Absolutely.
Three-point shooter. Jason Capone came out of UCLA. I mean, Jason Capone has taken no one off the dribble. But because he could get behind that arc and knock down points, he carved out like an eight, nine, ten-year freaking career. And got attention. You know, Eric Murdoch. You know, I know Patrick would be familiar with a brother that, Eric Murdoch, right? Eric Murdoch should have got attention.
Yeah.
He was a great defensive Bridgewater East, right? He was a great defensive player, could play the passing lanes. Bo Outlaw had the ugliest shot in 20 universes.
Bo Outlaw, definitely. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, and Bo Outlaw in 20 universes, but he could do one thing well. He could defend, and he could defend, and he could play. Larry Mr. Mean Smith, he could rebound his ass off. Danny Fortson, he could rebound his ass off.
Yeah.
So the NBA is about, can you do one thing well? Now, if you just happen to be, a guy that can do everything extremely well, then that's even more, right? That's superstar calibration. Right, but if you look around the league and you look at teams and you look around the league and you look at teams, right? Capella, right? He led the NBA rebounding, right? Starting center for Atlanta. Mm-hmm. They won tonight, right? They beat Milwaukee. And so Trey went for 48 tonight. Trey ain't going to lock down anybody on the one-on-one, but can he get to the rack? Can he get at that floater?
Can he shoot from distance?
Yep. I mean, Steph, right? Steph can shoot from any fucking oasis on the planet. You know what I mean? Yeah. They do one thing extremely well. That's the NBA. But if you can get that guy that can do the multiplicity things off the dribble, off the handles, LeBron, Kobe had that kind of versatility, Magic, Bird, Doc, MJ. Yeah. I mean, those are the ones that are in that 1% category of the league. But the great majority of NBA players do one thing extremely well.
And guess what? Mm-hmm. That's what they're saying about this kid, Cade from Oklahoma, who's I thought he was only 6'6", 6'8". Because he has that facility to do everything well, but he can shoot. But Eric, you're 100% correct. And going back to I'm looking back to my time in the league. But that's true. Very true.
Yeah. If you do one thing well, the league notices it too, because I interviewed John Starks and I interviewed Blue.
Right.
I asked them, who would you play with if you could take a teammate from anywhere? And they both said Bo Outlaw. Outlaw has a reputation of being one of the most reliable teams in the league.
I mean, Oakley could not jump over a friggin' phone book. You know what I'm saying? But did he have value? Can he play for winning teams? Can he get to the glass? Can he defend? Can he be that tough MF-er? You know, that's going to bring it every night. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Patrick had that face-up jumper, right? Very small hands. Ewing had very small hands, so he couldn't get to the rack, grip the shit, and rip it. He had hands of a 6'5 guy or a 6'7 guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he had that face-up jumper. And when he tried to bring that intimidation, Hoya, destroyer shit to the NBA, Michael Ray Richardson grabbed both his wrists his rookie year. And Patrick must have spent the next 20 minutes trying to shake his wrist away from Michael Ray Richardson while Michael Ray Richardson was lecturing his ass that he's in big dog country now.
Yeah,
he could not shake his wrist at all from Michael. Michael Ray grabbed both his wrists. Ewing is grabbing and slapping and flinging, and Michael Ray Richardson is just lecturing his ass knowing he ain't going to escape his grip.
I give a perfect guy that's like that now out your way. Patrick Beverly.
Absolutely. He does one thing well, pain in the ass ball player. Nothing great. Sounds great. You know, and you look at Chris Paul. Chris Paul, I enjoy fundamental players so much, right? Because they play below the rim, but why are they so damn effective, right? Chris Paul his handle is like a passport. He gets anywhere he wants off his dribble. Fascinating player watching him play off his handles. What does he do better than anybody? He's got a decent J, but his handles Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Navigate from anywhere on the court. He does that exceptionally well. And this kid, Booker, right, that's coming around, is Devin Booker. Devin Booker, you know, he got game, overall offense. Monty's using him real well. He can score. He can flat shoot. But one thing he can do in short distances, he has this incredible burst. Anywhere in a five-foot ratio, he can outrun anybody. And he can get separation because of that. But after he gets that burst, he's got enough control to get in poise level and knock it down. That's a different skill set. That one little niche shit he got is that Dwayne Wade, Flash, all that bullshit. Wade came off the pick like lightning. No one could ever catch up to him. He would come off that pick and roll and just swing to the rack, and it was over. You know what I'm saying? And so these guys do one thing extremely well when you do the analysis. Yeah, they can play. They can dribble. They can find an open guy. But there's one aspect of their game for the 95% of the NBA players is really just one skill set that has them getting that check.
And it's interesting to see the kind of lineup of players that they have coming out this year. And, Eric, you probably know this kid, Get Green, that plays with the G League.
Jalen Green. I mean, I seen him as a prep. Matter of fact, one of my peers, his son played on that team out there. Man, I can't think of the name. They're kind of like a Finlay prep, or they're kind of like a Monverde. You know, he played like it's basically an NBA prep school, really. You know, D1 prep school that he went to. And Jalen Green, my God, he can go fucking get it, man. He'll probably go no lower than the third pick in the draft. He's got full skill set. I mean, this kid is nice as like nice from an offensive standpoint. He's off the handles. He's got range. He's got moves. He's got skills. He's got hops. He's got character. He can bang in the paint. He can get separation. He can pull from deep. He's got a mid-range. Very dynamite player. And he could have went anywhere D1, but so how it worked is, and this is what's going to take place with basketball, because Mike was talking about
it is.
The NCAA. What happened with Jalen, he took the D-League's $500K max as opposed to fucking with college.
Mm.
Now he can enter the draft. But he got a half milli as opposed to, you know, writing a blog and shit. Fuck it, I'll go to the P-League and get a half milli, play 30 games and shit, then go into the draft.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The trick is, how many other kids, there's going to be a bunch of kids that we already know, but I can do the same thing. Bruh, no, it ain't like that at all.
Hey, guys, I just want to congratulate Atlanta on a 116-113 win tonight. Way to go, Hawks. Good job.
Yes, they did.
Now the series has done.
Again, well, I'm telling you, they ain't gonna win this thing.
That Mike Budenholzer, he might as well just fucking give up that coach. I mean, Mike Budenholzer. I mean, how dumb is the coach? I mean, the Bucks win despite of his ass.
It's called white prison. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that my man,
I mean, he literally was going to F away the Nets series. How the fuck you got someone like Antetokounmpo not guarding Durant? You got your 6'3" guard Drew Holiday guarding Durant, and you got your what kind of shit is that?
You know how bad it is. You know how bad it is. I have a buddy of mine that called and says like, he does know that Antetokounmpo's out there and can guard Durant, doesn't he?
He's got Antetokounmpo chasing Joe Harris.
That play
he drew up with Brook Lopez in the corner for the violation. I got a sixth grader can draw up a better play, out of bounds play like that.
The sad thing is, he thought it was Kamala Harris instead of Joe Harris. That's the problem.
I just say the same thing. Need to give love to the coach of Atlanta Falcons because it's amazing to me. Now this brother got fired, and all of a sudden he's in the same Falcons. It's amazing.
Like them old Jerry Lewis Labor Day telethons. That tote board is a little bit higher.
One more Budenholzer dig. Any explanation why Bobby Portis can't get 2 minutes?
Yeah.
The New York Islanders,
I mean, at least he could have chased Durant. And Steve Nash, I'm sorry. You know, you cursed yourself when you put Mike D'Antoni on your bench, and you deserved it.
Now, have you guys heard about the latest hiring today? That's really fantastic. Particularly the Nets assistant coach, your brother, is now head coach of the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, Udoka, right?
Another brother coach in Boston.
I was shocked to see that.
God bless KC. KC Jones, rest in peace, brother.
Now let us all bow our heads in prayer, and hopefully he doesn't pray his white wife at the news conference when he gets hired.
He's married to that sister, that's even better.
But you know what? Just in case, please don't have them sell tea in a cup during the press conference. That's all I ask.
Eric, I know a certain former coach in Texas football brought his wife, and his wife looked better than the owner's wife, and people got a little upset. I hope this not a replay.
Well, I mean, Udoka's got good taste. He's married to Nia Long.
Oh, Lord.
There you go.
Married to Nia Long, you know.
I mean, at least she won't be revisiting
Boys in the Hood. Trey, don't go out there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd be smiling too.
Who's Reg, just love him and hate him at the same time. That's all.
Who was Nia Long, the coach?
Well, I mean, the positive thing is, you know, Nate McMillan, man, you know, boy, does he deserve it. I hope he pushes him through.
Yeah.
And Doc Rivers, like we said, the money, once you've seen Doc in Game 7, you should have just bet the house on Atlanta.
Well, the question is, when are they going to make him the head coach?
They
should got interim tag on him. I don't understand that.
Ben Simmons,
they should be checking to see if Ben Simmons has any money wired to him from the Atlanta Hawks organization.
Shots fired.
How do you have four games of zero field goal attempts in the fourth quarter?
Reg, to be fair, don't say shots and Ben Simmons in the same sentence.
Hold on, T. I gotta write this shit down. T, it's some good material. T, hold on.
There's a new sandwich going around at Philly Deli's. You know, because growing up, you know, if a guy had to have a peanut butter sandwich, they called it a choke sandwich. Now they call it the Ben Simmons special.
Poor Ben. It's like that old little rascal's like, poor alfalfa, poor alfalfa. It's like,
I mean, it's getting so bad, man. You know, they're revisiting Michael Jackson's song Ben because there was a rat in Philly.
Yeah. And if he hangs out long enough, they might bring Willard back too.
Mike, are you there, Mike?
No. I don't think Mike's a Sixer. I don't think Mike's a Sixer fan.
Not that much.
I'm here. Is he in the sandwich? I'm enjoying it, bro.
Hey, Mike, I'm glad you returned from that dartboard you have of Ben Simmons.
Poor Ben.
I have to say that they took delight in roasting Simmons and Doc Rivers. You know, Philadelphia's used to this shit. In 1976, when they were loaded, they lost. We owe you one. After Portland ran, there's a whole lot of IOUs that Philly ain't paid yet. And unfortunately, this process is done. You know, MB
that's
true.
But they stuck with that coach 2 years too long. The kid Maxie, he looks like he'll be a good guard in the future. But really, the process netted nothing for them. Zero. No championships.
And see, in the NBA, you get that 3 to 5 year window to win, and when you don't, you either become the old Clippers or you become the Jazz, good enough to make it to the first round, but not anywhere after.
What you're talking about, T Mac, is the Portland 76ers.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
We'll get to the playoffs and then we'll get eliminated pretty quick because hearing Doc say, come on, Doc said they got a plan for Ben Simmons next year. I mean, you're a Philly fan. You're like, we had a home game 7 and we're paying this guy upteenth dollars and he can't get up a field goal attempt. He didn't take shots in at least. I mean, the stats are out there. I'm going to, you know, so if I'm not correct, but at least 4 of the games in the fourth quarter, he was 0 for 0 from the field.
Good Lord.
Where is the money order from that undisclosed Atlanta payout person?
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody take that man.
When you start seeing shit like that, you start looking for the payola.
Somebody check that man's cash app. Somebody check that man's cash app right quick.
You guys brought this up. Think about the differences between Ben Simmons and Hakeem Olajuwon. Now, they're not necessarily the same player in terms, Olajuwon came in, had his game together at Houston, and he was a little rough at first when he got to the pros, but once he had the dream shakedown, that shit was close to unstoppable. Ben Simmons has a jump shot.
And it was beautiful to watch.
Even know who
absolutely.
It was.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It was beauty. It was basketball beauty.
And to his credit, he was already a decent defensive player coming in.
Yeah.
So it was just a matter
of. Very coordinated, and he played a lot of soccer, but none.
Well,
the dream shake was beautiful, man.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
It was.
And then he could hesitate off the shake. I mean, and if you slow it down, Ewing is looking into a holographic dimension while Hakeem is banging a dunk.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because he was just
like,
shaking him up with that shake.
Hated on me again. That's exactly right.
You're right. Beautiful hoop.
Mm-hmm.
Hakeem was beautiful to watch. I mean, you know, in terms of how he could move, in terms of playing the post, man, just textbook. And no one can play like that. That's why bigs to this day, and even guards like LeBron, they go and camp with him to learn some of those moves.
Yep.
And when Dwight Howard finally got his MVP, he spent the summer with Hakeem.
Uh-huh.
Yep. The beauty about Hakeem, to your point, yes, it was spectacular to watch. It was like seamless hoop for purists. But also, he shared the gift. He's teaching guys.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, which is important. Mm-hmm. Which is important. I think something that I think we need to watch out for, and we will talk about it, I guarantee you, and that's this. There is a push big time to make the young lady in San Diego the first woman head coach in this league. It's more than a coincidence. It's serious, guys. And I have nothing against her. She's good at what she does, but I ain't putting ahead of Sam Cassell. I ain't putting ahead of the brothers who've been in the league for years, and she's been in there 4. So I'd be very careful in watching that.
In reality, any of us who've been in these locker rooms, and we know language, and the locker rooms are a total different thing. That's what got Isaiah in trouble, right? Him and Marbury.
Yes, that's
you know, Isaiah went right to the locker room to an executive. But he brought locker room language as an executive, and he had that Anucha Brown who knew all those textbook IBM laws and shit, right? Knowing that he was out of pocket with that language. And so any female coach, you know, that takes a job, man, is going to – listen, I remember, what's his name, the little dude, the Zara the Telestrator, whatever his name, Fratello. right, when he was coaching Cleveland.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a firsthand report where Mark Price, after a loss, good old choir boy Mark Price, was digging in his chest like, you know, Mr. T or some shit. He was in his chest about the rule book.
So if you're gonna be
a female coach, you might as well get used to that Too Short song. You know, what's my favorite word?
Yeah,
come
on. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It can get unfortunate that way. Becky Hammon's trying to get that gig. Respect goes for so well. Now, there's some really good women coaches, and men can get in line, get in alignment too.
But
Becky Hammon can coach, you know, and there's some other sisters that can coach, like Lindsey Hart, and she was at Duke. She's at SAC now. She's going to coach the Nigerian national women's team, you know, things that sort of thing. Aretha Witherspoon, I believe, was with the Van Gundy squad down there in New Orleans.
Yeah.
So, now there's some really good women that can really do the job. Staley, you know, she's outstanding, no nonsense, X and O person can dial it up. So, in fairness, there are some good deals, but that's a tough gig, though. That's a tough gig.
And quite frankly, when I covered the years, Liberty for years, Spoon could take it, or she could give it back.
Right.
She was hardcore. She was.
She could give it back.
Right, right.
Gentlemen,
so, I mean, yes, sir.
Oh, no, go ahead. Finish your point, Eric.
Oh, no. I was good. I was good.
Well, I want to set it off and give everybody their props for a really beautiful flow tonight. You know, this is an important subject. But before we go, because we started off with Ronaldo and the fact that he was able to lock up Coca-Cola to the tune of over $4 billion.
Nice
job. I asked everybody to give us a little bit of thought. Now, if you had similar stroke like that, name recognition, and there was something that you wanted to push in terms of commercial value or food you liked or, you know, something that you used and whatnot, a tool, what would you consider advertising if you had a stroke like that? What would you want everybody to pay attention to, and what would you try to sell if you were of that mindset? Reggie, you go first.
Reggie.
Well,
yes,
I guess
sir,
it wouldn't be something
sandwiches.
There we go.
No sandwiches. Now I was looking at Shaq trying to holler at some shorty girl, and I'm like, well, his feet alone is enough to scare him. But that's another 2 hour show. But no, I was real excited to see homeboy from Virginia Union, Ben Wallace, in the draft representing Detroit, and also the general manager of Detroit is a graduate of Bowie State. So we have HBCU back to back. But
as
yes, sir.
A spokesman, what would you want to push in terms of advertising if you were a celebrity and people paid attention to you the way they paid attention to Ronaldo? What would be the one thing that you'd want to sell or, you know, let everybody know about how good something is?
You know, the sad thing about that is you had to get a niche with the market because, number one, young folks are going to gravitate what you're selling.
True.
That's number one. Number two, you're going to have to get a team, market team together in order to see what's able to move forward, be it on Twitter, be it on social media, because a lot of times you can move more product on Twitter and social media than paying big bucks in advertising.
Oh, I get all that. I understand that.
You know,
but
so,
you're at the head of it.
No, I'm just saying, I would have to have a team together because I'm not going to sit up here and make up something and without, you know, looking at it. I mean, it'd be nice to say golf balls or shoes, but, I mean, the way social media is now is you get bang for the buck, but you got to have the niche where people want it. I mean, Stephon Marbury had tennis shoes over in Japan, but yet they didn't catch it on here.
I bought a pair to my daughter.
China.
Size 12.
Yeah.
That's in China,
Got to have the right niche.
Fred, what would you try to push if you were the major commercial guy? What kind of product or service do you think you could advertise well because you believe in it?
Mm-hmm.
I guess he wants a sandwich too. Wait no, Fred. Somebody wait on Fred.
I mean, he's trying to decide iceberg or romaine.
While he's ordering, then, Eric, understanding the premise, what would you push? What would you sell?
Well,
you know, I mean, that's really broad. I mean, I think it's an excellent question, and you know, my mind is ranging for multiple things, but there is something that I would really share, like really upfront, that most people have an incredible interest in, and literally today have an incredible misunderstanding at the same time. I would promote, you know, and put something in position and put something in place where people would understand what is the science of money.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Okay. There you go. Financial advisor. I like that.
Eric, I'll add something too from my years on Wall Street. The psychology of money.
Exactly. It goes right with it. And because that understanding is just something that can change a lifestyle overnight, and what value really is, and what really is it? You know, and most people have no clue, because I teach it at 24/7, and I talk to even those who are like MBA in economics, and you know, I can share things that's a jaw dropper. And there's so much stress around finances. There's so much debt. There's $1 trillion in student loan debt. There's $1 trillion in medical debt. There's just stress the fuck out behind resources and money. And then when they get it, they become nothing but pure consumers.
Yes.
But they understood the science of it, like really what it represents and how you can best maximize it, and not to be fooled by someone signing these fucking contracts and see what part of that's truly an illusion. Then it would shift the equation so dramatically, because the number one thing that people get effed up, and this has nothing to do with race, because it's that mean effing green. Where you at, OJs? That mean green.
Yes,
you know
right.
what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So understanding that mean green shit and the illusionary part of that, and because we know how to get it. We know how to pursue it and get that contract, but you understand the science of that shit and how to make that thing grow and make it work, it would shift the equation, because it's been the body count. A sister told me two things. She's a correction officer at one of these hardcore joints. I think everyone in the United States knows about Folsom State Prison, right? Wasn't Johnny Cash writing some shit up in there?
Yeah.
And, you know, she works there. She said, Eric, you know, listen, you know, she says, people are in that position for two things, sex and money, and money's 90% of it.
Come on. That makes
a
lot of sense.
Eric, can I ask something, Eric? Your point is on point for my years working on Wall Street, but it really starts with how the family perceives money.
Absolutely. It starts so early. You're so correct. You know, what I learned about that, say, from a personal standpoint, I shared it. This is like a case in point. As someone who's a fucking money person, as a case in point, here's someone. We all know a person like this. So there's this one beautiful woman, you know, let's say she's mid-50s, 60s, whatever. Everyone loves her, golden heart, and, you know, no enemies in the world. She's the go-to person, the counselor. No one's, there's not a person around that won't do anything for her. But she has no clue about money. She struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got an asshole, condescending and shit. Arrogant as fuck, doesn't want to help anybody else, but he understands the money game, look like he's getting by. Now, personally, we always going to deal with the woman with the golden heart, but there's no karmic, there's no such thing as karma that's going to circle back to this person if they don't understand the science.
Mm-hmm.
That's bullshit, pure mythology.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know that game. You got to know that fucking game. So now you tell me what athlete or anyone that's ever even broached that subject. Zilch, zilch, zilch.
That's right.
Zilch, zilch, zilch. Fuck a social program. You know what I mean? F a social program, you know, about, oh, well, we need to do this and we need to get, I mean, listen, what the fuck? We've done all that bullshit. We've got more educated people ever, more doctors, lawyers, presidents, secretary of the states, vice presidents, mayors, judges. You know, we can go ad nauseum with that shit. So we've proven we can do that bullshit. None of these motherfuckers got the idea how to move that dough. So the whole thing is, if you're like in these African countries that control all these diamonds and wealth, like in Nigeria, right? Nigeria's got more dough than anyone else in the country because of that oil wealth, right? But some of them brothers there are brilliant enough to know how to manage that shit. They will never let them come to the United States and teach shit. They bring in the cash they cut the deals with. Yo, y'all motherfuckers gonna come to America, but y'all can't say shit about the real scientists. Them real magicians over there, they never let them in here.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
There you go.
Never. And that's a factology. How come no one sets up any things about these kind of levels? So we can sit here and talk all day, but see, the key is that that small percentage laughs because they know most people don't understand money. I think I just remember when Tyson, when Trump still had a private citizen thing, he was just running his little bullshit empire, and he was sitting at a press conference with Mike Tyson when Mike was the heavyweight champ, right? I think this was during the Givens bullshit, right? And someone said, what is the hardest thing that Donald Trump ever had to do? And the answer was, keep a straight face when Mike said he's going to take over, take control of his own money.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Patrick, you agree along the same lines as what Eric said?
I agree 150%. And I just want to just piggyback on Eric's thesis, which I can concur from my years in Wall Street. Now, I have a nephew that's been working with financial institutions for almost 30 years, and he gets nuttiness. But it all starts, I'm going to tell you where it really scares you guys. I shouldn't say scares you, but where the foundation is built.
Right.
And you're in a situation of growth. Unfortunately, I hate to say that, but it's true. Unfortunately, our people are not geared psychologically and scientifically or spiritually or religiously to deal with money. Why? Because there is this stigma that's programmed us to think that money is something that we should not have and be afraid of. The European Jews do not have that. It's interesting.
They call it the poverty mentality.
Yes.
And unfortunately, that's something subconsciously, it's a part of you that you don't even know until you're coming. Let me get a perfect case. Black churches got more money than you could possibly think of. But they
can't talk about because that all the time.
Because they're locked in a religious philosophy that the money something has something to do with the growth of God. No, it works hand in hand. Again, I'm not going to expound it, but Eric said it. But that factor is important. What I would do is have some application, like also leaning on what Reggie said, that folk could tie into to get a multiplicity of services built within the app to focus.
You've got to manage that shit. I tell people all the time, like, you know, I'll celebrate when a person says $50 a month. They go, well, Eric, it's only $50 a month. I said, that's $600 a year. You could use that money. That's $300 every 6 months. Think you could use that money? So they have this thing, and I share this too. They have this thing called penny stocks. Right.
Yeah.
So if I have a penny stock, and I made one tenth of a penny one day. Okay, it was an average day. Then I make 4/10 of a penny, a sliver of a penny. I had a great day. They have an economy dialed down where the penny gets slivered up. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not honoring yourself when you do that stuff. So now it's not because you don't understand wealth, because the gold, the diamond, the platinum, the uranium, the cobalt, the silver, the copper is born under your feet in the mother country. Given to you, oil, all of that is given to you as a gift. So obviously you can't say the creator's a racist, because he put that riches there more in one place more than he's put any place with the world. Forget about the cinnamon, the frankincense, the myrrh, the incense, and all the trees, the ebony, the mahogany, the animals, all that exotica, all the herbs, all that thing is you can't find nowhere else. And all these people are wealthy off our culturalization. Yeah. So they knew by nature we're naturally wealthy. So we're indigenous to wealth. We understand the wealth concepts, but it was depleted with a different science. when you rearrange and able to communicate with that science, is people can capture that all over again and totally shift the equation. Why is China over there? Why is Russia over there? Why is there AFRICOM over there? Why are they tying it up, this, that, and the other? You know, because they understand that's the wealth component that keeps feeding the planet. Diamonds is the biggest bullshit known to man. Because I know a brother that had mines, that had mine connections over there. He said, listen, E, diamonds are as common as broken fucking glass. It's what the Europeans do with the Beers and how they cycle it through the system to make it seem like some rare shit. Diamonds were found in a mountain in the Congo just the other day where all these brothers and sisters was just digging up diamonds big as thumbs and nickels just recently. And so all these places, so we understand natural, organic wealth, not fake wealth, not Ben Franklin. And until people figure out that they really put themselves in a fucked up position when they chose a social security number over real wealth.
And with that, and with all that, is the fact everybody's over there, but
Gary, tell us what you got, baby.
Well, I would do the teasers of the not your mascot organization. This organization has really helped our Native American population. Would wear these shirts and would not have the Cleveland Indians. And had a Braves and the Chiefs and the Chicago Blackhawks.
Sounds more like a not-for-profit commercial or advertising, but I like it.
Makes sense to me.
More like a PSA. Tony, what you got to say?
So you still don't believe in Trae Young, huh? You still don't believe in Trae? Look. Yes, we all look. Say what you want about his hair. Cap Calloway made a history. Cap Calloway made bank because of that. So don't bother. But this is becoming even more interesting and more interesting and more interesting. And in a small way, someone in Atlanta is saying, please let them get to the finals so we can at least recoup some of the money we lost from the voting rights suppression. Oh, I mean the All-Star game.
No shit. Whoa. There you go.
Hey, T-Mac, you said whoever you referred to. I also see Adam Clayton Powell out there shooting them jumpers.
Yep. You know what? Would it be a stretch to throw Whitney M. Young in there too?
I like it.
Although he had that premature gray. He had gray hair when he was 12.
This is true. He reminds me of a brother I used to know named James Joyner. We used to call him Old Man because he had premature gray. He looked like Wes Unseld, but he was only like 6'3".
Did he slap people in the back of the head like Wes would do in the paint?
Well, he tried to throw the elbow pass like Unseld did. I can tell you that.
Oh, there you go.
In terms of,
I thought y'all were talking about Kid Creole and the coconuts.
in terms of commercials, Gary just gave me a good idea, so I'm gonna do a commercial and a PSA. If I could hawk anything, I would hawk for the return of the original formula for Alphabets with brown sugar. That was my favorite cereal because of what happened to me with the whole place. I was traumatized for life and shit. So this went back to Alphabets.
Mike, you weren't a Crisp and Quake guy?
Oh, hell no. Fuck both of them.
Hey, Mike, were you trying to spell your high school sweetheart's name out there when you're grabbing them alphabets in that milk?
Oh, yeah. But I ran out of Q's and shit. So what can I say? Anyway, in terms of a PSA, a brother, Ivan Carty, one of my soul patrollers,
put this out there, and I thought that was an interesting premise. This was regarding January 6th. Okay, so all of that shit that was going on where it took 5 hours for them to make the connect, how the fuck could that happen? I've walked Washington, D.C., and the distance between what was there and where they were going to go was only 5 miles. Here, I believe, and I am theorizing, Kushner went abroad to Saudi Arabia. Had the coup been successful, that motherfucker would have came back with the okay, and the Saudis would have recognized the new government. Now, I may not seem like anything to some folks, but like they always say, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. On that note, I'm going to leave it like that. I'm going to give you a taste of some Benny King as we walk out the door, because that was some supernatural shit they dropped on us. Thank you all for the knowledge. We will see you Saturday for the stir fry.
I love you.